Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Faking Movies. You are listening to episode 60. That's right. We're nine shy of nice.
So nice.
And believe you me, we have no plans for that, but there will be a lot of childish jokes. Which isn't really different than our usual style.
Yeah, it's on brand.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm joined, of course. I'm Lee. And I'm joined, as always, by my dear friend Seth. What's up, Seth?
I'm alive today. It's been a rough week, so I might be a little more resigned than usual. But, you know, I'm alive, which is
better than the other thing.
I can be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously... We never want to see any of our co-hosts or any of our friends having a rough time. But if there was ever a movie to pull you out of the funk,
oh, that's true. But I watched it before things turned to shit, so it was
a little bit
of a bad mood. I should have watched it again last night, and I decided to watch Jurassic Park instead, which is also a good choice.
I mean, that's a great Happy Place movie for anyone.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, by the way, any listener out there, any listener out there who has little to no knowledge of Jurassic Park, please,
oh my God,
drop us a line.
Anyone who doesn't know what the word Jurassic means? That's a deep void.
Listened to me do that one speech over and over and over again, which I've done many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's possible. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're also joined, of course, this week by our dear friend Zach. What's up, Zach?
Not much. How is it going?
I'm all right. I'm all right.
After good. Millions of years, that Sam hardens into amber. Jurassic Park.
You're decreasing our chances.
Oh, sorry.
Well, maybe somebody has a friend that lived in a cave or something. Maybe.
Yeah. Or a relatively new English speaker.
Sure.
I feel like it's not a super hard jump. That spoils anything to say Jurassic and then also the word amber. I feel like they're pretty well correlated in the zeitgeist.
Hey, do we know anybody that was like part of a cult up until like, I don't know, the mid-90s? Or like was like a mole woman a la Kimmy Schmidt or something? Because that can work. That could definitely work.
I don't know anyone, but I mean we can put out the call.
I feel like I might.
Maybe some Amish, some ex-Amish, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that might work.
That's
like
almost
that plausible.
Territory. So yeah.
Well,
I'll ask around.
Sure.
With my Amish connections.
Seth at the grocery store. Are you Amish?
Hey.
Hey, you.
What does Jurassic Park mean to you?
Hey, Mennonites, what's up? You like cars and cell phones? Well, listen to this.
And we can make those jokes now because we've already done Back to the Future.
Yeah, I know. Sure, it's good.
Everybody, you should go check out our Instagram account for updates about the movies we do. Check out our Twitter. It has been really hopping lately. I have some exciting news as of this moment of recording. Our Twitter account for our show has surpassed my personal Twitter account for number of followers.
Oh, shit.
All right. Mm-hmm. Is that a good benchmark? I don't know. How popular are you on Twitter?
I was more popular than our show was.
Okay. All right. It's a real relative metric is what I'm saying. But yeah, all right.
So, Zach.
Yeah.
You're up this week. Why don't you tell everybody, we already did a little teaser for this at the end of last week's episode, but refresh everybody's memory. What are you doing?
Right. So I'm doing an apparently quite beloved movie, Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, you sure are.
With a cast that I guess in hindsight I'm bummed out about, but it's still pretty good.
Well, it's your own fault.
Well, sort of, yeah.
No, it is.
All right, so we got Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Ellen Barkin, the Bloomers, Jeff Goldblum himself.
I don't think anyone has ever called him the Bloomers.
Oh, it might come up later, so don't worry about it.
Oh, interesting.
How does he not have an Outback endorsement at this point?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Tim and Eric directing a commercial where he comes out of a Bloomin' Onion?
Yeah. There's a lot
of already gold from the batter.
Yeah. There's a lot of Pissman's mustard in it, but it. Yeah.
I just rewatched that this morning.
That's so good.
You know what? I really, really hated Tim and Eric and everything they ever did. So,
I felt like that for a long time and then flipped. I don't know why. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, he works with them a lot. That's all I was getting at. And they do a lot of weird commercials.
Yeah. I mean, he should call Jemaine Clement and then have have Jeff Goldblum pretend to be a New Zealander pretending to be an Australian for the American audience. It'll be great.
Subtle. Very subtle. Yeah.
There's layers to this onion.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
All right.
There's layers to this blooming onion.
Oh, snap.
Outback Steakhouse, hit us up.
Oh, yeah.
Our creative
I hope they
team.
Don't use Heinz in their restaurants because fuck Heinz. But.
Well, that is a deal breaker.
I feel like they probably do because most restaurants do.
I mean, yeah.
All right, we also got Clancy Brown, who I didn't know last week, and then looked up, and he's that guy from Everything, so, yeah.
Clancy Brown is definitely that guy from Everything, including every animated series ever, because he has a very, intense voice.
The voice of Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob.
For example.
And Tambor himself, Vincent Schiavelli.
tall Tambor. Yeah.
So that'll be good. And notably Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
If anybody missed last week's episode, at the end we gave Zach the first three cast members and then forced him to pick the rest.
Yeah, out of all the good people.
Yeah, and do you have the people you that didn't get make the cut, Zach?
I don't. It was Christopher Lloyd was in there. Oh, fucking Yakov Smirnoff was in there.
Yeah, it was Christopher Lloyd. Well, the list that we gave you to choose from, and you got to choose, I don't know, three maybe?
Well, no, I got to choose one, and we got to choose.
And then you guys gave me the bummers,
What? Oh, Clancy Brown is great.
Clancy Brown is one of
the Christopher Lloyd.
Acting category.
He's no Branson, Missouri native. Well, not native, but Yakov Smirnoff.
Not native.
Hero. Let's say hero.
Yeah, okay. Well, the list that the three of us had to choose from was Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, Clancy Brown, Vincent Schiavelli, Dan Hedaya, Jonathan Banks, and Yakov Smirnoff.
Real murderer's row.
Yeah. Really well, good. It was fun to fuck your shit up.
So. Yeah. No, I like that game a lot. It's very good.
So, Zach, before you get started, you know that we thrive on cinematic blind spots here.
Uh-huh. Is there another game? What's happening?
Sometimes the blind spots are made worse by our own actions.
Oh, no.
So, Seth, why don't you tell them what the full title of the movie is?
Oh, again with this shit?
So the full title is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, literally the same?
No, it's not.
Oh.
Yeah, it turns out the full title is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai in the Eighth and a Half Dimension.
That's actually not it either.
Guys.
It's The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Excuse me, I used the wrong preposition.
Yeah.
For Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, it was exactly the same prefix that got left out.
Yeah, I forgot
That's weird.
About that.
Yeah.
That's very weird.
Well, anyway, we didn't want to give you too much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So. Oh, certainly not. Yeah. That would have changed things, honestly. Would have made it harder, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, give us whatever bullshit you came up with.
Mm-hmm. All right. So first note is with this insane cast that I forgot we even played that game. I wrote my movie before I even knew what the thing was. And so I did a just downright mournful job of using pretty much any of these people, which kind of bums me out in hindsight.
Yeesh.
Yeah. All right.
Really taking the fun out of fucking with you. I gotta tell you.
I mean, you know. All right, so my movie, Buck-Aru Banzai.
Oh, shit. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But...
totally kidding. Not it.
Aww.
I have my three throwaway ideas. First off, sounded like a really good title for a kid's movie, like mm-hmm. animated something, but like with a really racist Japanese character dressed up like a cowboy. But that doesn't really go anywhere, and we haven't done an animated one yet. I don't even know how that would work.
We did the Iron Giant.
Oh, well, sort of did it. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we have Lee's dildo movie.
We do. Mm-hmm. Thank God we do. It's a real treasure.
It's a real marketing boon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then I went to a Karate Kid spinoff because I just watched all the Cobra Kai thing on YouTube, and boy, is it really good.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things. Yeah.
I've heard good things, but...
it's really fun. Oh, it's so fun.
I am suspicious.
That also didn't really go anywhere. And then the one I almost went with was a Christopher Guest-style movie looking deep into the competitive bonsai world where there's a new cowboy in town and he's really
I really, really like this idea already.
Oh, man. I love Christopher Guest, most of the Christopher Guest movies.
Yeah.
The last one was not good.
What was the last one?
Mascots.
Oh yeah, uh-huh.
It was a Netflix only thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would watch the shit out of Christopher Guest competitive bonsai movie.
I know. Mm-hmm.
It's the problem was like I kept trying and it just kept coming out best in show and I was like it's just not gonna work. Like it's gonna be.
Yeah, so. I get that. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
And you didn't go with that. Like, you know that I'm surrounded by bonsai plants.
Right? I know. Well, again, yeah, like, the pandering was ripe. But, oh, yeah, I just,
shit, bro.
I couldn't make it work.
Had an ensemble cast and everything.
Yeah, it's perfect for a Christopher Guest movie, yeah.
God, Zach, you're so stupid.
Fuck. Okay, never mind. I'm going to do that one. I'll just fucking ad-lib it. Here we go. all right. So, real movie. The story of Hiro Onoda. A name that probably means nothing to you, but I think you'll recognize the story at some point. We open in the Great War. Our main character, Bloomers, whitewashed to fuck as a Japanese soldier, remains on the island he's been fighting on, steadfast to defend his homeland.
Wait. Jesus, you made Jeff Goldblum a Japanese man?
Well, I didn't get any Japanese men, so this is what we're going
with. Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. Boy.
So, man. Did you choose him because he was the actor you most recognized, or because you thought, hey, swarthy, so why not?
Yeah, he's super swarthy. It's kind of a, Sir, what's his name that played Gandhi? One of those, like, he's definitely...
Ben Kingsley?
Ben Kingsley. Yeah, he's definitely not Indian, nor is Goldblum Japanese, but it's like, of the group, like, he would get away with it the most, which is to say, not very much.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, there's a good history of... Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about... We don't need to talk about Mickey Rooney on this show.
God. I don't even remember what his name was in 16 Candles, but it was offensive.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't even what I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that? Oh,
you were talking about Long Duck Dong.
Long Duck Dong. Yeah,
that's
it was
the
played
one.
By an actual Asian person. I was talking about Mickey Rooney in.
In
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh yeah, that's. I mean, I feel like the 16 Candles one is basically trying to emulate that Long Duck Dong or that Breakfast at Tiffany's super offensive bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What
so.
Did he play? Mickey Rooney playing an Asian person?
No, not
yeah,
Mickey.
He was in super big, super bad yellow face. Like,
oh, wowzers.
Buck teeth, all kinds of like, yeah, it was.
Yeah, all kinds of.
It looked like a Bugs Bunny pro World War II propaganda cartoon come to life.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was pretty shitty.
Okay, great.
Anyway,
so Goldblum's doing this
movie,
huh?
Yeah. Bloomer's cool. Doing it. But it's more of a serious role, I guess. So that's not worth anything.
I still don't understand why you're calling him Bloomers, but all right.
It's a thing now. It's a thing.
Okay.
All right. Initially, he obviously hates his enemy, the quote Buckaroo Cowboys from the U.S. Mm-hmm. They fight tooth and nail until things seem to quiet down a bit. Hiro was given orders never to surrender, as was customary for Japanese soldiers, an order he adheres to steadfastly.
Is this about the guy who didn't surrender until, like, the 80s?
It sure might be.
Uh-oh.
And you got the decade wrong, but yeah. So the fighting has entirely subsided, and after a few days, he begins to explore the island, which then goes on for weeks, as there's no sign of life anywhere. Now somewhat delusional, given the isolation and given the horrors that he previously saw, he finds lots of dead Allied soldiers, but seemingly no one alive. He doesn't seem to realize the situation that he's in, but he continues to stalk around evasively for months. Finally, he settles in a bit, still refusing to accept that he's the only one on this island. The loneliness eventually starts to set in, and he reluctantly starts to amble around the bodies, almost all of which strangely seem to be U.S. soldiers. While he still hates them, and even though they're now long dead, it feels somehow comforting to be around what at least used to be humans after so much solitude. Time passes, he starts to investigate the bodies a bit, and scavenge what he can from them to make life easier.
Is this going to turn into Swiss Army Man?
No, but yeah, well, that would have been great, but I mean, maybe, sort of. Not really. After a while, we see that he's outfitted almost completely in United States soldier gear, including a new rogue cowboy hat he found amongst the various loot.
Nice.
Years mm-hmm. pass, and he gets used to this new life, having degraded a bit more mentally. He's invented...
Don't be mean. If you were alone that long, it would happen to you, too.
Oh, yeah. It would take way less time. It'd be like 2 weeks, and I'd just kill myself, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Zach, remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah, sure enough. He's invented personas for several of the dead U.S. soldiers, now just bones, and he talks to them as if they were alive. Because Jesus. Personally plan poorly, literally every other character or cast member in this movie, including confusingly Ellen Barkin, shows up as the ghost of one of these bodies and interacts with him in some way. So there's a lot of like weird hijinks, and he gets to know each of them individually, and he kind of, you know, he's dreaming all of it, or like it's sort of delusional.
He's had like some sort of mental break, and it he's dissociative at this point.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, as is the case in war, like, he's now humanizing these people that he hated so much, and they all mm-hmm. have their own sort of personalities, and it's one of those, like, oh, we're all humans sure. kind of moments, yeah.
Sure.
Bunch of regular Wilsons.
Castaway is the other sort of obvious choice here, yeah.
Yeah.
He begins to slowly consider himself one of them without really realizing it, and he adapts a sort of cowboy persona and affectation based on only the few Westerns that he saw before the war and what he imagines Americans are like, having never really met one.
Sure.
Many more years pass, him sort of technically holding up to these orders that he was given, but really just living a somewhat relaxed life in isolation and the charade of his new Buckaroo character. So he's kind of settling in. Like, he doesn't actually mind it that much. Finally, on his daily foraging rounds one day, he sees a boat approaching. Having almost forgotten that there's an entire world filled with other people out there, he panics and retreats to his camp. While hiding, a search party eventually shows up, having followed the smoke from his fire. He jumps out to confront them, yelling, "Banzai!" as apparently was customary at the time. And everyone is understandably confused at his appearance. His commanding officer, now barely recognizable to Hiro 30 years in the future, greets him and explains the circumstances. The war has ended long ago, and he has to come back with them. Confused and almost feral at this point, he doesn't respond. After some coaxing, they get him onto the boat, and as it sets off for the mainland, his commander drops the formality and begins to ask him questions about what he's been doing all these years, uh-huh. referring to him, of course, as the Buckaroo Banzai.
That's the end of your movie?
That's it. Oof. It's the real story, but I invented all the ghost parts in the middle. And the cowboy part, I presume.
Yeah. Honestly, like, you could cast anyone you want in that movie. That's mm-hmm. a pretty good premise. Yeah. Like, that's a really interesting way to treat that story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's like way less sad and weird. And apparently, so the guy in real life like wasn't actually like mentally unstable. He just like was very steadfast in his whole deal.
Sure. Yeah.
And when he got back, he was like, "Yeah, I was just doing what I thought I should do." But yeah, I just can't imagine what he did for fucking 30 years on that island, right? It's crazy.
So. Ate a lot of fish, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Talked to his volleyball. Yeah. Who knows? Mm-hmm.
What? Don't be mean. Don't be mean.
There's historical precedent for that.
Ah.
in the Hanks canon.
So Zach. Yeah, we haven't done a Hanks yet. We should get on that.
They're all too famous is the problem, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
Yeah.
Zach, so that was your Buckaroo Banzai.
It sure was.
Would you like to hear the IMDb summary for The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension?
Two things. Mm-hmm. Yes, so much buildup. I can't fucking wait to know what this movie is about. Uh-huh. Two, I know that I already lost hard. I knew that weeks ago. And it again, it's very upsetting that I have to keep doing these apparently really fucking good movies.
I like this game.
Yeah. Well, don't be mean, Seth.
Oh, well.
I'll do it. It's fine. But
I mean, Lee, like, remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
That's
so
true.
Is this playing into the movie? I thought that was... All right, I don't know. Now I'm just confused.
We are quoting a very specific scene, yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay.
Over and over again.
That was from a song. Isn't that a song? No.
Well, Don't Be Cruel is an Elvis song. I don't know if that's what you're thinking.
Oh, is that what? Oh, okay. That's what you kept saying that for? It's all coming together. All right.
Well, no. Anyway, let's tell you about this movie.
Sure. Yeah, so. Please. Oh, God, there are so many commas in this fucking description. Anyway. All right, so, Zach, here is the IMDb summary for The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Adventurer, brain surgeon, rock musician Buckaroo Banzai and his crime-fighting team, the Hong Kong Cavaliers, must stop evil alien invaders from the eighth dimension who are planning to conquer Earth.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it would be so stupid, but with this cast, it had to have cost a lot, so I bet it's really fucking great.
You know what? With this cast?
Very cheap.
Yeah. It's 84, so it's pretty early.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like late 70s, early 80s.
They spent no money marketing this movie. They basically handed out, they put ads in comic books and they handed out pamphlets at Star Trek conventions. That's how they marketed this movie.
Really targeted marketing then.
And it didn't make a lot of money. It cost $17 million and the box office was only 6.3. But it has become such a cult thing now.
Yeah, I think I have to show Zach the shirt I'm wearing.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, this had been mentioned, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Whew. Yeah, that's really something. That looks like a ska band, if I'm being honest. Yeah.
It does look. We're back to Stank Corner.
It's got the right amount of people, and they're all wearing black or white. So.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's just a silhouette. That's why.
Sure.
Yeah. It's not a photo.
What? No, back to Stank Corner.
Yeah.
Well, I'll post a picture online when this episode comes out of my shirt. So, Zach, I want to read, if I may, before we get into like a slightly more in-depth summary, I do want to read you the opening crawl of this movie.
Can I interrupt really quick? If you had to pick a boss tone for that crew, which one would it be? Probably Blooms.
He would be
the
mighty, mightiest of the boss tones.
I'm going to guess Blooms or maybe Chris Lloyd. I don't know.
All right.
Jesus Christ.
Let me.
So many levels of bullshit in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Lloyd. God damn it. A real fester type.
Chris with a K.
So here is the opening crawl.
Okay.
Buckaroo Banzai, born to an American mother and a Japanese father, thus began life as he was destined to live it, going in several directions at once. A brilliant neurosurgeon. This restless young man grew quickly dissatisfied with a life devoted solely to medicine. He roamed the planet studying martial arts and particle physics, collecting around him a most eccentric group of friends, those hard-rocking scientists, the Hong Kong Cavaliers.
That's true.
And now, with his astounding jet car ready for a bold assault on the dimension barrier, Buckaroo Banzai faces the greatest challenge of his turbulent life. While high above the Earth, an alien spacecraft keeps a nervous watch on Team Banzai's every move.
So many questions.
So
that's like two movies worth of shit right there. Like they blew all that in the crawl. That's crazy.
This movie is in media res, and it is bazonkers.
I've mentioned this to Seth. I came across when I was doing some research on the movie, a video on YouTube. It's from this site, The Awesomer. And it's just the video is called The Importance of Buckaroo Banzai. And one of the points that they make in this video is that superhero movies before and since Buckaroo Banzai
they have built-in audiences from, most of them have built-in audiences from already existing. Sure. So the example they gave was in the first Superman movie from the 70s, Superman sees Lois Lane's in trouble and he pauses and looks at a phone booth. And if you have no idea what Superman is, you don't know why he looks at a phone booth before he goes and saves her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But since there's already built-in fans, you don't have to explain these things.
Right.
The point that they made in this video is Buckaroo Banzai was a wholly original idea where half of the movie is built on moments that true believers, fans would recognize if they were familiar with the character already, but the character didn't exist.
Right. This is very fun. Yeah. There's been like notable failures in this regard too, like Pluto Nash and like things like that, where they're just like, these type of movies are really cool. Kids are going to love it. And then when you make a universe that nobody knows, it's everybody's like, this is just stupid. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Should I give a more in-depth explanation?
Yeah, you might as well.
My other question.
Let's get real dirty with this with a U. With possibly an umlaut on top.
Definitely
of
with
it.
An umlaut.
Dirty.
anybody from the town that we all inhabited gets that. Yeah. U's only come with umlauts and dirt. hard rocking scientists.
I'll explain that part.
This is literally my goal in life. Like, that is what I'm trying to be.
Zach,
but I think I'm the only one.
I also happen to own the novelization of Buckaroo Banzai.
They got Eric Clapton for the front of the Buckaroo Banzai.
No, that's Peter Weller. He's just playing an alpine white Strat with lace pickups.
That's pretty cool.
Right. Which is Clapton style, you're right.
Yeah.
So one of the things that the novelization, the guy who wrote the script, Earl Mac Rauch, had been writing this like novels about this character for years, but he said he'd write 2/3 of a novel and then quit.
Okay.
And he made friends with W.D. Richter, who directed the movie, and that guy happened to be one of the screenwriters on Big Trouble in Little China, favorite movies.
Sure.
And W.D. Richter was like, hey, we should get funding for that character you really like. You should write a movie about it. And they wrote this movie, and then he wrote the novelization just to explain what the fuck happened in the movie.
To get some sort of universe out there? Yeah.
It's pretty necessary, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the things that is made much clearer in the novel is that Buckaroo Banzai owns and operates an institute, like a scholarly institute, where he collects different scientists from different fields, just a lot of academics at the top of their fields, to come and join his institute of thought. It's basically a giant think tank. And one of the requirements to become a full-fledged member of this think tank is to also be part of his band, the Hong Kong Cavaliers.
Yes, this is exactly what, like, oh my god, my life. This would be the fucking dream come true.
They also happen to be borderline, like, secret agents because they do a lot of, like, government-level crime fighting.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Fighting against like international supervillains and things. Yeah.
So in the novel,
where do they find all the time? That's three full-time jobs.
I mean, he does have a lot of full-time jobs. Yeah.
That does.
In the novel, they introduce a character named Zan, and he's supposed to have been like a Fu Manchu type villain.
Mm.
And Zan is responsible for the murders of Buckaroo's parents and his wife. And that leads into the sequel that they tease at the end of this movie that never happened.
At the very end of the movie, they say Buckaroo Banzai will return in Buckaroo Banzai Against the World Crime League.
Oh, so very explicitly tease in that case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
Huh. But and we'll, it was never end, we'll, created. But yeah.
Yeah, and I can talk a little bit about that at the end.
Okay.
There's a lot of reasons. But anyway, I mean, other than the movie making almost no money.
Yeah.
Sure.
So Peter Weller is Buckaroo Banzai. He's got this whole team of scientists around him. He vents. He's driving like a supersonic car, but he also has an invention because he has a theory that between solid matter there exists planes of existence. So it's like string theory.
Yeah, like essentially there's a bunch of space in between molecules, which does make sense. Like most molecules are empty space, but like it's so impossible to really tell the superposition of everything, so like
yeah,
whatever.
Our audience gets string theory. That's fine. We've all seen Donnie Darko.
I was going to say the Nova special about the book The Elliot Universe. But
oh, yeah. No, yours is better. Yours is better.
Jesus Christ. So, both of those are terrible examples. that's total garbage.
He drives into what we later call the eighth dimension, and he comes back.
We're getting way up in the dimensions in that.
I know, right? Yeah. The eighth, yeah. Like
he jumps right to the eighth. Yeah,
if we get into some, yeah, it's a real problem. But yeah. This did come out in what, 84? What was this year?
84, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So he does that. He comes back out the other side, and he realizes there's life forms in this dimension. He and his rock band, the next scene is them playing at a club in New Jersey because they hang out in New Jersey a lot.
That's what I do if I just got back from the eighth dimension. Like, oh, that was pretty cool, but let's go play that gig we got in New Jersey.
Yeah. So they are introduced as New Brunswick's own.
Hanging out around. Yeah.
Local references.
So I wonder,
like,
how connected to Rutgers University is the Bonsai Institute.
For real.
Like,
yeah.
That's fun. All right.
But yeah, this leads to the best scene in the movie where we actually see them perform.
I cannot imagine.
In the novel, they keep referencing them as playing syncopated music at syncopated music clubs. And in the movie, it's just kind of like random 80s rock and roll.
Yeah,
syncopated is not a style of music.
I know.
Not yet.
Well, I mean,
when Buckaroo gets his hands on it, though.
All right.
Yeah, they were clearly just playing it like some shitty like pseudo dive club, like
which is weird because they're supposed to be the most popular band in the world.
Wait, is syncopated a play on the dimensions? Like if you play music in the fourth dimension, then time is a whole different thing or something? Maybe.
I haven't finished the novelization yet, so I'll have to get back to you on that one.
It seems possible though.
Yeah,
it really does.
Well, that seems more plausible than there being a genre of music called syncopated.
Sure. Oh, remind me at the end to tell you about how this novel invented Apple Watches in 1984.
Uh-huh. But, fun. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so while they're playing, we get to see Peter Weller actually play guitar in this scene.
Yeah.
Because he's an accomplished guitarist. He also plays pocket trumpet in this scene because he knows how to play pocket trumpet.
Huh.
Like the actual person, Peter Weller, knows how to play pocket trumpet.
Peter Weller, PhD art historian, Peter
Weller.
Whoa! Yeah.
So he's actually Buckaroo Banzai, is what you're saying.
Yeah, his friends call him Murphy, but you can call him fucking Buckaroo Banzai.
I do love when an actor in a movie can actually play the thing, or like do the skill, like if they like can ride a skateboard or whatever, and it makes so much of a difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, or like Ivan Drogo, who has like a master's in chemical engineering or whatever.
Dolph Lundgren speaks seven languages fluently and was a fashion model while getting his postgraduate degree.
I don't know if it's accurate, but I heard he was a Rhodes Scholar.
He's in Mensa.
I believe he was.
I think his IQ is like 140 plus. Yeah, he's like, but he's also a huge dick, apparently.
No.
I mean, he's very accomplished. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Certainly. You assholes.
I know I'm going real deep on this one scene, but it's just so cool.
This scene is really cool. We'll send it to you in a hot second.
So then he hears a woman crying in the audience, and that's where the "don't be mean" line comes from, because the crowd is heckling her, and he's like, "don't be mean."
Oh, the crowd's heckling her for crying.
Yep,
that seems weird.
Yeah, well,
hey, now, don't be mean.
Hey,
we don't
now.
Have to
hey
be mean.
Because
remember, no matter where you go, there you are. It is the best fucking thing in the world.
It is pretty great. It is pretty great.
Yeah.
So then he plays "If I Don't Have You" on the piano for her, which is, and this is a weird bit of trivia for the movie, Peter Weller didn't know how to play piano, but he learned how to mime playing piano for this scene.
I don't doubt that, given the facts I just learned about Peter Weller. Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't just learn how to play this song
on
piano.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's true.
given he could play the guitar so well and a number of other instruments.
Yeah.
Anyway, the woman in the audience, we later find out, who then tries to kill herself in the audience, but someone stops her accidentally. We find out that she is the long-lost identical twin sister of his dead wife.
Whoa! Wait, and he didn't pick up on that?
Like, well, having he does. What his wife, when he sees her in the crowd, he picks up on it.
Okay, yeah.
And it's more developed in the novel, but we get that. It gets revealed later in the movie that he noticed this.
Okay.
And
this is Ellen Barkin, presumably.
It is Ellen Barkin.
Yeah. Yes, uh-huh.
So then we cut to a press conference with the fucking, like, Secretary of Defense, where he talks about going into the eighth dimension and finding alien life forms. And then that's when we find out about the villains of the movie, which are the red Lectroids from Planet 10, who have been trapped in the eighth dimension since their leader, John Worfen, tried to overthrow their government years ago.
This movie has a very poor understanding of how the dimensions work, apparently.
Yeah.
yeah, it definitely does. John Worfen is possessed the body of John Lithgow.
Yeah, John Lithgow plays Dr. Emilio Lazzaro.
He does a good bad guy. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Very aggressively, stereotypically Italian.
Okay.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stories about him, like, having, like, a weird, like, grip or something as his Italian coach, and then crediting him as an Italian coach later. Yeah.
Oh, that's
Okay. Yeah, I was also reading that Lithgow said that this was the only time he ever truly let himself act over the top, which I've seen all of Third Rock from the Sun, and that can't be true.
No! All of everything he's ever done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So Emilio Lazzaro is sharing a body with the consciousness of the leader of these evil aliens.
You know, you're saying words. I just...
In 1938, these aliens escaped from the eighth dimension and have been living on Earth the whole time. Uh-huh. And they all have the first name John.
Yep.
sure.
And they all have weird last names, like Christopher Lloyd is John Big Boutte.
All right.
Dan Hedaya is one of them, so is Vincent Schiavelli.
John Gomez is his name, John O'Connor, like everybody is named John. Like all of the aliens, both the red aliens and the black aliens are all named John.
Mm-hmm. That's very good casting for aliens, thinking about all those actual human beings.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. And I think I sent you a message, Lee, that was like, Christopher Lloyd looks absolutely, or no, it was Dan Hedaya looks absolutely no
indistinguishable.
Different as like, a weird, bubbly alien. And Vincent Schiavelli also is completely indistinguishable as like a weird bubbly alien.
And they had these weird like custom made for each actor masks that like made them look slightly lizard-esque.
Yeah.
But they look terrible. Yeah. The masks are horrible.
Wow.
So at the press conference, these aliens kind of assault everybody and try to steal the machine that helped them enter the eighth dimension.
Okay.
They kidnap Buckaroo's mentor, a Japanese scientist who was friends with his parents.
Yeah.
To try to help them finish their machine so they can get back to their home planet. In the meantime, there's a bunch of like gunfights and stuff, and Jeff Goldblum has joined the team at this point, and he's a neurosurgeon named Sidney Zweibel, who they give the nickname New Jersey to.
Uh-huh.
Okay, all right.
Everybody has nicknames, by the way.
Yeah, I love it.
He wears a crazy 10-gallon cowboy hat, Zach.
Aha!
Yeah.
Buckaroo!
So you got that right.
And like,
love it.
full fur chaps. And...
Sheepskin chaps,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, wow. Yeah, he looks like a... like a weird rodeo star. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Who else? So Rawhide is one of the other guys, and he's played by
Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown.
That's a good nickname for him. Yeah.
He gets killed during one of the attacks, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
He sacrifices himself to save Buckaroo.
He often does in movies and Lost. Yeah. That happens.
Yeah. He does. Yeah, he did Lost. You're right.
In movies and Lost. Oh, boy.
In The Highlander, he does die in that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen Lost. Yeah.
then we meet the good aliens, who are the black electroids from Planet 10, and they appear to be Jamaican people to,
Man, we are getting close to some real rough racial shit in this movie.
Zach, what's the... John, what's his name? I forget. The good alien.
It's something like not that interesting, as I recall.
But he has an incredible just silver jacket that is just the most amazing thing ever.
Oh, yeah, okay. He's just John Parker.
John Parker. Yeah. That's right.
That's benign. John Parker played by Carl Lumbly, which I'm not really familiar with.
Not familiar
work,
with him otherwise.
Sure, sure.
So all this shit goes down. The bad aliens are trying to get back to their dimension, and Buckaroo and John Parker have to stop them because the good aliens are going to instigate World War III, so the bad aliens can't succeed. They end up stopping the bad aliens, and a bunch of people die. And
yeah, it's cool though because they don't. Matter.
I'll note that you even like describing this plot, you just sighed deeply between those sentences.
Because it's very.
This
so,
is
I'll get into this a little bit later.
Very complicated.
It seems incredibly tedious. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not tedious, but it is very complicated.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving pieces.
That's. That's sci-fi in general. To be fair, like I can totally see like having just like the success of Star Wars happened, and they were like. All right, you just got to introduce a bunch of characters and make everything really complicated, and it's totally going to
work. I was just thinking like Dexter Jexter, yeah.
Yeah.
sure.
And Moa Nadron.
If this movie had been the 20th movie in the Buckaroo Banzai cinematic universe, it would be just the easiest thing to follow.
Right, but, sure. Yeah. Having been the first.
But being all Beatty Arrest, it's a little difficult to follow the first time through. For sure.
Yeah. I totally get that. Yeah.
So there's also Buckaroo's fan club is called the Blue Blaze Irregulars, and they are basically a secret militia that he
employs.
You know, at this point,
including a child who has an AK-47 at one point.
Yeah.
What do we need at this point in the movie? Probably like a whole bunch more characters, I would guess. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, like Pinky Carruthers? We meet Pinky Carruthers at this point.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, there are characters who are mentioned but never seen in the movie as well. Like,
oh wow!
Oh yeah, yeah. They reference a lot.
They thought this is going to be like a multi-decade franchise for sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure they did think that. Because this movie is kind of a satire too. Because it's like it's like hearkening back to your to
it's a pulp serial.
Yeah. So like, while it is super self-referential, like, that's kind of on purpose.
Sure.
Just kind of like...
Absolutely.
Fuck with the squares, as it were.
And then the end of the movie is Buckaroo and Peggy end up together when the aliens send him, like, a jolt of healing energy to save her life.
Why not? Yep.
And the end credits are the most famous scene in the movie because it's every good character in the movie walking through that really famous like dry concrete reservoir in LA that they like the drag race from Greece is filmed there.
The LA River.
The LA River with the theme song of the movie playing, including all the characters who died.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fun.
They're all walking toward the camera. And I was mentioning to Seth
it's
earlier.
It's great. It's wonderful. It's a beautiful scene.
You've seen Life Aquatic, right, Zach?
Yeah.
You know the ending scene of that movie where they're all walking toward the camera?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That is an homage to the ending credit scene of Buckaroo Banzai. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if ever, I mean, Wes would be the one to do that, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's fun. So that's more or less Buckaroo Banzai. It is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it is.
That is bizarre.
And I love it.
It is a very hard to recount movie because it is. Very complicated. So like, for instance, the Wikipedia article that has a summary of this is out of order compared to the actual film because it is so convoluted. Like, the Wikipedia article makes it seem way more coherent than it is.
Yeah. It feels like if we had a whiteboard and like 12 hours, this would have been much easier. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm willing to videotape myself doing that. So
stay tuned, audience.
So one of the things I kind of alluded to a few minutes ago, So I watched this right after we decided we were going to do it last week. And then I watched again last night with some friends of mine.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really stood out is basically the middle of this movie doesn't need to happen.
Oh,
Yeah. Agreed.
It's right up to the press conference scene, and then like the last 10 minutes are maybe the only things that need to happen in this whole movie.
Interesting. So you're saying would it have been better just cutting that out? Or, I mean, so again, you described about four movies worth of shit that happened.
Yeah.
Like, right.
Would it have been better if they spaced it out more like a normal movie, or like...
I think if this movie were a TV show.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Okay.
But it also would have kind of ruined some of the magic of how crazy it is.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there is something too, like, we're just gonna fucking balls out on this one. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Seth, should we talk about the fashion?
Oh, yeah, we should. Oh, shit, we already mentioned a little bit with New Jersey, Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, and Silver and Jacket was a thing I remember. Yeah.
Well, Silver Jacket. John Parker. Yeah, it's John Parker. And Jeff Goldblum in his weird cowboy outfit.
Pardon, bloomers. Bloomers.
I really don't want to make that a thing, but all right.
Listen, Gretchen, no one wants bloomers to happen. Just stop it.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Stop trying to make fetch a thing.
Yeah. So this is maybe, I don't know that any movie has ever existed where the fashion was more over the top 80s just excess than this movie.
Seems like a bold statement. But
there are so many like white double-breasted suits with no sleeves and a no shirt underneath them.
So Perfect Tommy, who I believe is the character that you would play, Zach.
Yeah, we were talking about this. Okay. You're Perfect Tommy.
Perfect Tommy has bleach blonde hair. In the end credits,
he's
walking around wearing an Italian-cut suit pant with a white, heavily shoulder-padded leather jacket with, like, the fucking Michael Jackson lapels and no shirt underneath, and like a just a hint of a neckerchief.
100% yes.
Yeah. Earlier in the movie, he is wearing a suit, very tight plaid suit with a matching plaid shirt and a matching plaid tie underneath.
Where do you even get that?
Like Buckaroo tells Tommy to give his jacket to Penny because she's cold. And he goes, "What? Why me?" He goes,
"Because you're perfect."
Don't you see my whole thing here? I can't break this party up.
Let's see what else. Rawhide wears very loose bolo ties along with incredibly plunging button ups. I think I'm more of a Rawhide. I'm a little more level headed and stoic than
the phrase "loose bolo tie" is wildly upsetting. Oh my god!
Well, just wait for your wedding, motherfucker. Because lot of bolo ties,
high and tight only. Like love bolo ties, loose.
Oh, no.
Not so much.
No. I like it loose.
Oh boy! All
right. Yeah, well, you're uninvited. Little Seth is now formally invited.
Oh, Proto well, Seth? I can wrap a bolo tie around that.
Oh, oh God, no, this can't be a
we
thing.
Just
Stop
talked
it.
About this last episode. This is
Stop it. Stop it. That is not the kind of callback we need to be making.
Seth's plants wearing ties, two ups in a row.
Oh, that's not what I was talking about.
Guys, we're
all right.
Penis as well, I guess, but yeah. All right. So now we've done this, both of those two ups in a row. We're definitely going to get famous someday, guys.
Yeah,
going to get famous.
Oh, for sure. maybe I think the fashion in this movie that is the most... carries the biggest legacy is Buckaroo himself, because Matt Smith's Doctor, the 11th Doctor, is basically wearing Buckaroo Banzai cosplay.
Huh.
Yeah.
It is almost identical. Like,
I feel
his
like...
collars are a little more tame. That's about it.
I was going to say, I don't remember his stuff being totally over the top. Is it like a bit more understated compared to the other crazy shit you just talked about?
It's like, you know, like, it's very specific types of suit cuts with the jacket always hanging open, but cut in a way that it should hang open.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like bow ties and things like he's dressed like Matt Smith, basically. Or,
Matt Smith dressed like him.
Well, yeah. I mean, I mean, Matt Smith dressed like the second Doctor, but he dressed like Buckaroo Banzai.
They're time doctors, guys. I mean, like,
yeah,
kinda.
I mean, they're no Steve Zahn, so whatever.
Well,
it's because he's real.
Yeah, he's real life Time Lord. Yeah,
accurate.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we're getting that back.
what other kind of stuff do you have for this week, Seth?
Goddamn, absolutely nothing, because I didn't take any notes on this movie for, like, I was watching
I was too hooked to take notes.
I just, like, I was trying to pay attention so much of the time, and as I said, I had a rough week, but, like, I just, like, it was just enjoyable to watch, so, like, I didn't critique it in a weird way like I usually do.
Mm-hmm.
Seems good.
It's a slice of, like... of, like, very pure fandom.
Yeah, it's like fandom, but for nobody, because there was nobody to be a fan of this. But also, like, I remember my father making references to this all the time when I was growing up. And I had no idea what he was talking about until,
Very beloved by, like, Kevin Smith has been trying to launch a TV show for years.
Yeah.
And thank God it keeps not happening.
Yeah. It's very beloved by, like, weird nerds that... Yeah, that... Yeah, that's all I need
to say. So it's exactly the audience they were shooting for originally, apparently.
It really is.
Yeah, but they didn't market it in a well enough way to, or in a good enough way, let's use the right. To make
There's also apparently a lot of rights issues with this movie. Like,
yeah, it's all over the place.
Part of the reason there's never been a follow-up in any way is because the rights are such a mess. Like, the rights holders sold off, like, the international rights but held on to the domestic. And then it turns out that there was some studio head that was doing under-the-table deals where they were selling the rights to something but not really. And they, like, very much a producer situation where they're selling the same thing more than once. So there's a bunch of lawsuits around it. It's very strange.
So you guys, it sounds like you guys had previously seen this movie. At what, like, age and how had this become part of your life?
I saw it in either late high school or early college.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was definitely in high school. I was flipping through, like, one of the extended Stars networks at one point.
Yeah.
Oh, look at me. And I caught... My name is Lee. I had enough money to watch it.
Oh, my God. You were college rich.
I caught the end credits one day.
The end credits are so awesome.
And I saw the end credits, and I was like, what is this? And then I spent, like, months trying to track this. Because, you know, the internet wasn't as good back then. So I found out what it was. It was just very hard to actually see it.
It'll take you, like, 5 or 6 hours to download a picture of Jillian Jacobs or whatever.
Jillian Anderson.
Jillian Jacobs, who was, like, very underage when we were in college.
I meant Jillian Anderson. We had talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's in the canon.
So I saw this in high school, and it made a very, very heavy impression on me. And then I finally got to actually watch it, and it was like, holy shit.
If someone out of this context were to describe this movie to me, I would have immediately pick up the phone and call you, Lee, and be like, if you have not seen this, this isn't your new favorite movie. It's very clearly made for you. Yeah.
My partner for a very long time, we had a change jar in the house, and anytime that I would reference this movie or watch the end credits on YouTube, she would make me put money in the change jar. There was a sticker on it. It was called the Banzai Jar.
And then we bought a car.
and then I dropped the jar one day and had to clean up glass for hours.
Oh, it's very poetic.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Seth, if you don't have anything else, I have a little snippet from the novelization that I wanted to read.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well. I got nothing other than... nope, that's it.
Okay. So, in the novelization, one of the characters in the movie who has, like, three lines, Reno, he's one of the sax players in the band.
Sure. Totally a ska band. Get the fuck out of here.
It's just an 80s rock band. They have several sax
but it's
players.
Like proto-ska. It's like proto-ska. It's even before
80s was like between first and second wave ska, I think. Yeah, it was the dark ages for ska.
So madness is waning.
I think that all stages were the dark ages for ska.
Well, one depends step on the ask.
Beyond.
No, like the OG British ska was out, and we hadn't yet made it to like cool 90s ska. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Quote unquote cool 90s ska.
Right, I mean, right. Real big fish, am I right?
Oh, less than Jake. Mm.
Wow. Well, when you bring those two up, I mean. Nah.
Oh, all right. In the novel, Reno, one of the side characters in the movie, he turns out to be the group's historian, and he writes all the Buckaroo Banzai adventure novels that they sell to the Blue Blaze irregulars and all the
the squares.
They're very famous in the universe of this movie, and they're very famous. So he's introducing Buckaroo and how the world views him to the reader. And one of the things is he says, right-wing people call him a communist and liberals call him a tool of the bourgeoisie. And he goes, so I just wanted to lay out his philosophy on the world so you can decide for yourself.
Wowzers. Okay.
So Buckaroo has principles that he lives by.
Sure. As any hero does. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's I'm going to start reading.
Oh, God.
What are these so-called principles of his, these subversive ideas which set so many knees quaking in high places? Every schoolchild who reads the Banzai comic books or listens to his weekly radio broadcast or watches his Saturday morning adventure show knows the principles by heart. They are called the five stresses, the four beauties, and the three loves. The five stresses, those things to be stressed, are decorum, courtesy, public health, discipline, and morals. The four beauties are the beauties of mind, language, behavior, and environment. And the three loves are the love of others, love of justice, and the love of freedom. Such is the nature of the controversial program set forth by Buckaroo Banzai, whose only desire is to help humankind. So he's Jesus also, is what I'm getting at right now.
Sure. I'm gonna take a step back from that. The guy that wrote this novelization lives the fucking coolest life that has ever lived in the entire universe. If ever a human has lived in his own truth, like, holy shit. Like, the can you imagine a guy sitting down to write that and like pumping that shit out and being like, yep, that's the one. Got it in one. Yeah. Nailed it.
So
Oh my God.
The guy who wrote this is very clearly a fan of Victorian novels.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
There's also several epistolary sections. Like, this is a very formally accomplished novel. It's not great.
Okay.
But it is very much of a particular form, a very particular genre, and it is a very good version of that.
Yeah. So this person was associated with the movie or not?
He wrote the screenplay.
Same guy who invented
the character and came up. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I just love that idea. Like, when the movie didn't do well, he's like, no one understood my art. And then he goes off and writes a fucking novel about
There's a few comic book collections since then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one in the mid-80s and one in, like, the mid-2000s, I believe, right?
Yeah, around the 20th anniversary of the movie, they came out with a bunch of media to celebrate it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it feels like this is ripe for a reboot. Like, we're rebooting shit that nobody cares about now, but, like, this one feels like it could easily be done. I don't know. And minus all the licensing.
I guess it could be, but I don't know if it should be.
Yeah. There's so much lightning in a bottle of this.
Sure, like, certainly.
It very much doesn't work, but that's part of why it's so fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that anyone who is a fan of this would be in favor of a reboot.
Yeah.
I mean, I would watch it. I would definitely go see it.
I would watch it, but I think that, like, there's too much built up around it, and that, I could see a more novelizations showing up, and them being, like, very, very good, but I'm not sure that it could translate to a visual media at this time.
Well, it would be hard to recapture kind of just the, like,
yeah, as you said,
slapdash nature of how it's very,
as you said, the lightning in a bottle. I'm not sure they could recapture that.
That's especially tough if the original was like kind of good by accident. Like if you up the production value, it only gets worse. Like that's not as fun
at all. Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a good point.
It loses yeah. a lot of its charm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's weird because it's not good bad. Like it's not one of those movies that's yeah. so bad it's good.
Right. No, it's like good. But yeah, yeah, that's,
yeah. It's good.
But comma but. Ellipsis. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Oh, I need to mention one of my favorite. I kind of mentioned this, but one of my favorite crazy things about the plot of this movie: all of the evil aliens escaped onto Earth on October 31st, 1938, which is
Halloween?
The date of the. Yep, it's the date of the Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast.
Oh, nice touch. Okay,
and Jeff Goldblum puts this together, mm-hmm. and then right. he makes the logical jump. And I say jump, when I mean that, I mean it's fucking Evel Knievel jumping the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, goddamn.
Oh,
like
what?
That Simpsons episode where Bart jumps, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, uh-huh.
His logical jump is that, well, and of course what must have happened is 3 days later when Orson Welles admitted it was a hoax, it's because they hypnotized him and told him to say it was a hoax.
Sure, sure. Of course. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Why? Why did they need to include that? No one was going to question any yeah. of that.
Yeah.
No, that's a, like, you get so deep on a script at some point and you're just like, yeah, fuck it, throw it all in. Whatever, nobody cares. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord.
I have a very sad theory.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Jeff Goldblum's character, New
yeah,
Jersey, fulfills a lot of the same roles as the character of Rawhide. And Buckaroo brings Jeff Goldblum on right before Rawhide dies, including being the piano player in the band.
Yeah.
And my little headcanon theory is that Buckaroo, on top of everything else, when he went through the eighth dimension, he also got a glimpse of the future, and he knew he needed to replace his best friend.
I mean, that only takes the fourth, but yeah, sure. Yeah.
True facts. True facts.
All right, we should rate this thing. Yeah. We've gone a little,
yeah.
we've gone pretty deep in this
yeah.
one.
All right, so the IMDb rating is 6.4 out of 10, which is not like super high, but it's okay.
It's yeah, that's middling, I'd say. Yeah.
It feels very correct.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, Lee, what are your ratings for Zach's version and the original?
Zach, I think your movie could have been awesome. It
could have been.
Oy.
If it were real.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, right. You piece of shit.
Go
like,
on.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, come on. No, I think
don't
it's,
be
I think
mean.
It has...
Why are you being so mean?
Don't be mean. We don't need to be mean.
Yeah. So I've heard.
Is there someone out there crying in the darkness?
It's me.
Yeah. No, I think this is because it gives the chance for an actor to have like a very like tour de force kind of performance.
Yeah.
But unlike Castaway, where it's just one person acting against nothing, you can also just cast whoever you want
yeah.
to fill these other characters yeah. and have these incredible scenes. Like you can have fantasy sequences, you could have more realistic sequences. Like it just depends
yep.
on his state of mind at the time. This could be a very interesting movie. And
yeah.
I bet you would get some award nominations out of something like this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay.
So I'm going to give you Sight Unseen a 7.8.
Woo! Holy shit. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I think this would be a great movie. I think it could be a real bummer. It could be a little more fun. It just depends on who you get to do the screenplay.
Yeah. Well, I left out all the middle bits where we talk to the ghosts and whatnot. I think the tone is very up in the air at this point. Yeah.
Right. The ghost talking is all where the
yeah.
tone lies.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, Buckaroo
yep.
Banzai.
Like in Mulan.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'll make a man out of you. Oh,
Let's
you guys want
to
hear my impression of
business.
My impression of Harvey Firestein in that movie? Ping! Ping, thank you for saving my life.
Well, you sounded like Harvey Firestein in literally every role that Harvey Firestein has ever been
including
in.
Including in Mulan.
David! David, we have to like, get to your mother's house. Oh no, aliens are gonna destroy all of New York. I'm Harvey's Firestein.
I'm gonna do a little character work right now.
Oh god, if, that hurt my throat so much.
Yeah.
Now, what if one day Fran Drescher were sick and
couldn't
film the nanny and Harvey Firestein filled in? I think it might sound a little something like this. No, I'm not going to do it. So,
Mr. Sheffield!
Mr. Sheffield! Cece, he will never love you.
Oh my god, we're all garbage. Oh my
really,
god.
Really, really committing to it.
Yeah. Let's get down to business. So
to defeat the Huns.
Yeah, the real movie, as you pointed out, Zach, oh god, it's super flawed, but
it is super flawed.
It is
yeah.
mm-hmm. kind of my personality.
Yeah, I was gonna say, based on what you described, I'd rate it higher than my movie for sure. Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a 9.5.
Oh, but
sorry, no, 9.6.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, that's worse.
All that's right. even higher. Nice, yeah, like, what the fuck?
I love this movie. It's I can't help it. No. It's so dumb. I love it so much.
I get it. It sounded fucking... I cannot wait to watch this. I've said that about every movie that I've done, but like this one...
It's on Prime.
Yeah.
Oh, watch it right now.
We do keep making you do movies that both Lee and I very much enjoy. So,
suck a dick!
Noted.
In the vernacular, yes.
Colloquially. What do you think, Seth?
I think that I
good start.
Will talk only like
Oh no! Wait! Don't stop! I have to set my metronome.
Zach, I really enjoyed your like World War II pseudo involving bonsai trees. story and I agree with Lee wholeheartedly in like this could be a thing that really depending on the casting and the screenplay could be really really cool. Like you could play with like the fact that your main character is recontextualizing and rethinking of himself as a white cowboy.
Yeah,
and you could cast anyone that you want, like mm-hmm. i.e. Jeff Goldblum in this situation. Well. And it could be really well no like but what I'm saying is like it's all about identity and it's all about like the shift between or like the problems with isolation and the shift between like your hated other and your own like personal understanding of everything. And
you could even, you're saying this now is making me realize you could have different actors playing that character at different points
sure
in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. that could be really like really cool.
I mean it worked really good in the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. Everyone loves that movie.
I mean
I never watched that, but I know too much about it to do it on this podcast, but maybe
you know
Zach
Tom
doesn't?
Waits plays the devil in that movie.
Yeah, I fucking know, but maybe Zach doesn't,
movie,
and
but,
we
yeah.
could use this.
Oh, no, no, I'm
Lee.
Familiar with that one, yeah.
Oh, you are familiar with that? All right, never mind.
That's a shame, because that movie sucks, and I wouldn't have given it a good rating.
It's a real Pluto Nash kind of sitch. Yeah.
Oh, shizzle. Anyway, like, I think that you could pull off a good version of Dr. Parnassus with okay. this potentially if it is treated with respect, which the other one wasn't exactly. But I'm gonna give you a very high nouveau angry Seth rating.
Okay. So like a 5?
No, I was gonna give you a 6.9. We're just 9 episodes off of that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we should probably figure that out. But as per the real movie, like as Lee said, it's like really fun and really ridiculous. And I enjoyed it more than I thought I would in rewatching, and I'm gonna give it another 6.9.
Oh shit!
Nice. So okay. you evened it out. It is.
I mean, you still lost by quite a bit.
I lost, but that was much closer than I would have guessed.
I enjoyed this movie, and I enjoyed your original movie, but they have very, extremely different tones.
And different potential, too, I think.
Certainly. This movie is fun and stupid, and,
And that's really all it could ever be.
And then what you created, Zach, I think could be a really interesting issue with, identity and how you deal with war, especially in, the World War II reactionary period and all sorts of things like that. It could be Oscar bait. But the original is also stupid and fun. And
I mean, you put a white guy in an ethnic role, it's always fucking Oscar bait. Let's be serious.
Well, that's not cool. Is that? But I feel like if you do it,
I think
right,
Gandhi did pretty well.
But
or, you keep coming back to the same example.
DDL did a couple of them, I think, too. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the issue with people white actors playing ethnic roles. It's clearly problematic.
Yes. I was imagining 1980 for this movie. So even 85 or 84 or whatever.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, people probably wouldn't have had as much of an issue.
All right. Anyway. So 69's across the board. Everybody.
So next week.
Yeah, next week. Unclear. Next week is a guest week, and I think we only sort of planned. So we're going to figure that out.
Yeah,
gonna
be a surprise. Sort of kind of planned.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be Seth's favorite movie, or maybe it'll be Star Wars or Jurassic Park. Who knows?
I hope we'll it's my out. Favorite movie. Oh my God.
I'll see what I can do.
I need a win. I need a win, guys. That one is really oh man, if I could just bitch about my favorite movie and how much I love it.
Okay, so there's in your favorite movie, there's a colon, there's a title, there's a subtitle. If we leave out
the title,
I think we can fucking knock this one out.
Thinking about that.
Yeah.
I think we can do it. We might be able to do it. I would love to rewatch that and talk with it about you guys and recite literally the entire movie from memory because I can. Okay.
I don't doubt that. Yeah.
Well,
you know, until next time, from me and the rest of the Hong Kong Cavaliers, remember, no matter where you go,
fuck LeBron James.
There you are.